It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it is Labor Day weekend, just to prove to you that we are here live as usual. And I'm really happy when live radio is live, so I was grateful that Angela and Howard decided to do the same thing, because working on weekends isn't all that bad if you're having a good time. So we are here and are planning to have a good time. Welcome back to all the regulars. I hope you stick around for the hour and keep telling your friends. And if you're new to the show, if you've just heard about it, or we told you, or you're just driving around with that station on, whatever, try to stick around for the hour. We promise you always to learn a little something anyway. Some of it, even with a little luck, might be useful.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. There is no topic that covers more people, influences more people, and affects more people than the topic that we do, personal finance. So we will talk about the aspects of personal finance that we want to talk about, unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and whatever you want to talk about, you will go to the head of the class immediately, and we will talk about your particular thing. Don't be afraid of asking easy questions. Just remember, the easier the question, the better we look. And your job, after all, is partly making your host look good.
Absolutely.
Yes, very important. I've learned that over my 18 years of speaking to these cans, and it's always fun. So give us a call and stick around one way or the other, and we'll talk about some fun things. And there's a lot to talk about, some of it good, some of it not so pretty, but, you know, you got to talk about it. Mama said there'd be weeks like this, and Lord knows there are weeks like this.
Yeah, I mean,
could have been worse.
It wasn't based on much, as far as I could tell, except maybe some profit taking.
Yeah.
There just wasn't a whole lot that suddenly made Thursday a volatile day, but it happened. So
well, you've probably heard us say many times that when a day like Thursday comes along, we look at each other and say, why? And if you can't answer it, then it's very simple. Because.
Yeah, it wasn't even like the futures were nope. down real big. It nope. just started, and then everybody started piling on, and there were just not a lot of buyers.
When you look back and you figure out what actually happened, and you see how little impact it had. In fact, I was with a group of people last night, and we were talking about it, and you're really just back to where you were a few days ago.
Yeah, and in fact, I have some stats on that.
I figured you might.
Yeah.
So we will discuss what happened. It's certainly, in my humble opinion, nothing that you ought to spend any time worrying about.
I certainly did not.
Nor did I.
For the most part, it didn't even undo the gains of last week.
No.
It was it's actually pretty remarkable.
Yep.
The NASDAQ fell the most over the week, dropping 3.3%. It ended within 2 points of where it started last week. Within 2 points. So it literally just wiped out last week. It's almost like the last 14 days didn't happen. So no big deal there. It's now up only 26.1% for the year.
Yeah.
So we'll have to live with that. The S&P dropped 2.3%, finishing almost 30 points ahead of where it started last week and up more than 6% for the year.
And for the S&P, that is a big number.
That's great. I mean,
30 yeah. is a very, very,
yeah, it is, because it's such a small base that you're talking about.
Exactly.
So the Dow shed 520 points after gaining 723 points last week. So it's still didn't give up all the gains of last week, and it's still off about 1.4% on the year. It has lagged the other indexes on the rebound. So, but still, not as bad as if you watch the news on Thursday. It was just doom and gloom, though.
Oh,
it was really bad. I had to turn off the sound because I couldn't take it anymore. But the tech sell-off was. They were having a field day with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to consider the source.
Yeah,
a lot of
absolutely.
These people want the market to go down. They want the economics to be bad. They want a lot of things.
I didn't get that impression. It's something to talk about is different.
24/7, 365
yeah, exactly.
news channel.
It wasn't, I didn't feel like they were cheering it. It was just something different happening that they could, you know, sell.
Yeah, NASDAQ going down sharply. That is something unusual lately.
Yes, it is. It has not happened much.
It has been on a tear.
So the tech spill-off kind of spilled into other sectors, and it really, like I mentioned, there wasn't a whole lot of reason for it. It's still, the sector is still up 28% year-to-date, so it's not like it really hurt it that much. Domestic markets weren't the only ones hit by the sell-off in the last 2 days. Australia dropped about 4.5%, Germany 3.3%, Canada 3.2%. Commodities weren't spared either. Oil dropped more than 4.6%. Gold dropped 81 basis points, silver down almost 3% as well. And the funny thing is even bonds got hit, and so the sell-off wasn't limited to just stocks. Long treasuries dropped 1.4% in the last 2 days, while the overall bond market dropped about 0.5%. So basically it was one of those periods in the market where everyone just sold everything.
Yep. Put some cash away for the long weekend.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too.
Fresh.
The biggest news this week was jobs. And even though the market did drop on Friday, the jobs report was actually pretty fantastic. We saw the headline number beat expectations. The estimates were for 1.2 million new jobs created and the unemployment rate to come in around 10%. Instead, the economy created 1.4 million jobs and the unemployment rate actually dropped to 8.4%, which, I mean, that's a huge beat.
That's a big change.
It really is. 1.6% improvement over that sort of 10% target. Major step in the right direction for the economy. So that was good to see.
And it did it despite a million new people coming back into the market.
Yep. And I know you also looked at, what was the other number you had mentioned?
The household. 3,700,000 plus new jobs according to the household survey. And what that picks up is the self-employed people, the small business people, that sort of thing, who have now been apparently able to get back to work.
Yeah, to some degree. But there's still way too many businesses closing because of the shutdowns, which is really sad.
Yep. Absolutely.
Some other supporting news to those jobs numbers were the ISM indexes. Both were pretty strong for August. The manufacturing sector came in at 56, beating the expectation of 54.8. Mm-hmm. Anything above 50 signals expansion. So 56 is actually a really good number. It was a pretty broad-based expansion. 15 out of 18 industries reported expansion numbers. Both new orders and production increased further into expansion territory during the month, which are sort of the forward-looking indicators. The biggest warning flashing in the report was the low number for customer inventories, and that means that there's shortages of certain materials in stores right now. And that's not surprising. If you've been shopping lately, you'll see a lot of things online are out of stock, on back order. I don't go to stores very much, but I'm sure the similar on certain types of goods right now, because of the shutdown, there's a backlog of production. Yep. So you're just not seeing the inventories in the stores. That's a pretty positive sign that demand is strong as well.
Especially pre-Christmas, where the production lines are going to have to really ramp up.
Yeah, definitely.
Between now and December.
Have to make up for that month or two that they were shut down, and they were expecting demand to fall so much, and it really didn't.
Yeah,
so,
surprise.
Yeah. In the services sector, the index actually declined this month and came in almost right on target at 56.9 versus 57 expected. Last month, it was at 67, but that number just wasn't sustainable because we were coming off a month of basic shutdown of all the services sector. So getting a huge number like 67, you're probably only going to do that once when you start to turn things back on.
Yeah, when you consider how the unemployment numbers are generated, you have to be looking for a job. So that million people that came back into the market would not have a positive effect on the unemployment. It would have a negative effect, which means a lot of them found work and a lot more. So don't be fooled by some of the things you see. It was, the other thing that was very major to me was there were over a million people that went full-time from part-time.
Oh, that's great.
And that is a really significant number.
It is.
That means benefits and everything. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
All right, a couple more little points from the jobs report and so on. The labor participation rate rose another 0.3 to 61.7, which still leaves it short of where it was pre-virus, but it's a much improved number. I like that. And then the economic reasons for the part-time work, I was just about to explain a little more. When the people go back to full-time, their benefits go full-time. And that means there's going to be more vacation pay. It's going to mean more people are covered by health insurance and that kind of thing. It's just excellent news. Besides, those are the people who wanted full-time and could only find part-time. That's a very, very good signal for the economy. So we have used up, there are 2.78 million people who were unemployed a month ago who aren't now, by the way. That includes all the self-employed people and so on. And that's another great number. So watch for a lot of negativity, I guess, in the media. I think my favorite one, not sure if I wrote it down, but one of the things in Yahoo News, I think it was, they said the job creation rate continues to slow.
To slow, yeah.
Yeah. 1.4 million, and it continues to slow. Okay, now, just proves a group of people can look at the absolute same statistic and put out a group of stories.
Well, my prediction is that it will continue to slow. The closer we get to pre-COVID highs, the slower the rate of expansion will be, because
it's easier to grow a low number than it is to grow
exactly.
a big number.
It wasn't all positive either. There was, especially in the services sector, there was a whole lot of various comments in the report, the ISM report, that some of them were reporting, I can't keep up. Everything is just, it's demand is through the roof. But then others were saying, we don't know if we're going to make it till Christmas. So it just depends what sector you're in, what part of the country you're in. There's a wide disparity between success, businesses that are succeeding and failing.
Who your governor is?
I mean,
who your mayor
is? There's no doubt about it. It's because the country is being treated so differently right now, there is a big disparity.
A lot of people came back to work in the hospitality industry. But when you look at how many people were out of work in the hospitality industry, they are hurting.
Oh, no doubt about it. And even the ones that are back, a lot of the consumer demand isn't there yet. The travel's so far down, people aren't going out to eat as much. And so the ones who are back to work may not be making the tip money that they used to make.
So when you've got 25% of your tables, if you're lucky, you're serving indoors. And we were down at the Reef last night, and they had a nice crowd. The tables were far apart and so on. But they had a very nice crowd, and it left pretty early. But I would think, not knowing any of the numbers at a place like that, I would think they're probably maybe breaking even.
Mm, gosh, that oceanfront rent's got to be pretty high.
Yeah, that's true. It depends who owns the building.
Big place, yeah, for sure. And speaking of which,
at least they can open. They live in a good county, I guess.
Speaking of which, the COVID-19 continues to dominate the headlines, and this week wasn't any different. Some of the market fluctuations were blamed on various comments about the upcoming availability of a vaccine. I don't know if that's true or not, if the market did react to that or not. But
that's only a panacea in people's minds.
The thing is, whether it comes out in November, December, January, even then, you're not going to have the numbers of people getting it right away. So it's
going to be nursing homes and hospitals,
right,
and people like that. You're
high
not
risk.
Going to see it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But, I mean, it's great that that is being developed and so many companies are working so hard, but I just have my doubts that it's going to just magically, everything will get better once the vaccine is here.
Do you know what a vaccine requires? What kind of effectivity requires to be okayed?
I mean, isn't the flu around 60%?
I think it's only 30.
Really? I thought it was higher, but I don't know.
Okay, but we've got a range.
Yeah.
There are no guarantees in a vaccine that it's going to work for you.
Yeah.
And there are a large segment of Americans who do not feel like they will take it because they don't trust the government. And then that might be 35% or 40%. I don't know.
I have no idea. But anyways, the numbers were trending down for the most part.
Yeah.
They flattened out this week a little bit. But the increases that we're seeing now are in states that haven't been hit before. So a lot of the Midwestern states are getting hit now that hadn't had large hits before. So the other good news is that we're not seeing resurgences in most places right now, even as things continue to reopen. So that's somewhat encouraging. Hopefully that continues to be the case.
Yeah, I'm somewhat optimistic.
I mean, I take it a day at a time. You just never know. It's such a – everything about this thing is so unknown.
That is the truth. All right. A couple of interesting headlines. I told you the one about the job growth slows again. Monday, Mayor de Blasio gave an interview about New York, and he said that he wants you to help him tax the rich and redistribute income. And he said it right on camera. Now, if I lived in New York, you can finish that sentence. Wednesday, Panavida froze over. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Says so right here. Kennedy loses in Massachusetts. It has never happened.
Yeah, that's right.
In the history of Massachusetts, no Kennedy has ever lost an election until this week. He lost it to the dumbest man in Congress, Ed Markey. If I offended anybody, don't call me. I'm not changing my mind. Friday, Yahoo. Why 1.4 million jobs created in August really isn't great news.
I mean, what? I don't even know what to say about that.
No, I don't either. But the big one, I'm going to talk about the big lie, but I'm not going to do it until after the break. In fact, I'll kind of set the table, though. How many of you have seen a TV commercial that Trump's plan would create a problem with Social Security so that they will be unable to pay benefits in 2 or 3 years? Have you seen that?
I have not a TV commercial, but I've read an article that did a sort of study that said it would, that Trump's plan would bankrupt Social Security next year.
Yeah, because he wants to quit contributions to it permanently. This is the biggest lie that I have seen perpetrated on the people in so long. Just when I thought political advertising could not become any worse, I was wrong.
Oh, you haven't seen anything yet. We're not even close to the
election. Oh, I know. It's not even October yet, right? Wow. I'm going to get into it. But I tell you, I have had quite an education since I started researching this thing. And I'm going to surprise you, too. And I've been very diligent about not breaking it to you, because you're going to learn something today, too.
I mean, I know a little bit about this. I'm not a fan. So surprise me.
See, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I am going to surprise you because you're not a fan, and I think I might just have to change my mind.
Your mind or my mind?
I already changed mine, so I guess it would be yours.
All right, that's what I thought.
All right, you want a couple minutes to do something before I break
so
into?
I got a list here. It's not a list you want to be on. It's the top 20 worst performing mutual funds of the decade. And you can probably guess what a lot of them are what they target, what they're based on.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of international, and there is some commodity. There's a lot of energy. But so I was scrolling through it. No real surprises. You've got precious metals and steel, just things that have not been in favor lately. Mm-hmm. It's been all tech and healthcare and things like that. So no real surprises until you got to number one. And it has a 10-year annualized return of -5.87. And I would say guess, but you probably wouldn't guess what company it's from. It's actually a Vanguard fund, of all things. I was shocked as well. A Global Capital Cycles investor, the worst performing mutual fund of the last 10 years. And if you listen to the show, you know I'm a big fan of Vanguard. They really don't have a lot of bad products.
I wonder where the manager that ran that is working today.
Yeah, probably not at Vanguard. But I was pretty shocked. Global Capital Cycles investor. I don't know exactly what that fund does, but I'm guessing that it tries to guess which way the world capital cycles are going and follow them.
Timing.
But apparently they did not do a very good job.
That might be a euphemism
for
doing a terrible job.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
I think so. You know what we didn't do?
What is that?
I forgot to give out the trivia question.
Ah.
My apologies. Brought to you, as always, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. I had a whole list of them today, and since I'm late, I'm going to do the easiest one. Over the past 25 years, what is the only month that has lost money in the aggregate over those 25 years? Now, that's so simple that there are only 12 possible answers. So, if somebody starts the bidding with a certain month, we can take it down to 11 and then 10. And I won't tell you if it's an easy question or a hard question.
Yet.
Maybe if we get a few guesses in. All right, we're going to take a little break. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to talk about the big Social Security lie. I don't like what it's doing to target the elderly in the country, and I include myself in that since both of us are on Social Security.
Not me. Yeah. You and your wife.
Yeah.
That, my mom.
Yeah, those. Yeah, you should be so lucky. Anyway, we don't like this kind of politicking, and it's got to be helped, I guess. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back, and I'll dig into it. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And trivia question is still open, as are the lines, 904-222-8255. In the last 25 years, what is the only month of the year that's had a negative return for that cumulative time? All right, how many of you have heard about Trump's payroll tax holiday? Probably a few, maybe not all that many. It has not gotten the kind of publicity I wish it would so far, but he actually did implement it. And there were a lot of questions I had about it, and I couldn't find anything. So I put out a feeler to my lovely and charming CPA, who is just so nice about such things. So she sent me back one of the services she uses is Paychex. And Paychex does a lot of this stuff because, A, they have to. It's kind of their business. So they sent her a nice summary last night. So I was able to put enough things together to sort of understand it. So, and I'll get right to it, except for one thing. Good morning, Mike.
Hi. Happy Labor Day, gentlemen.
Thank you, and same to you.
Thank you. I'm going to take a crack at the question.
Sure.
I'm going to say the month of August.
Now, why would you say that? Everybody knows October is a volatile one, isn't it?
True, but in at least, if I'm not mistaken, 50% of that time period that you mentioned, 25 years, it's been up, except for, 1987 and I guess 2008, it's had some up months, October.
Well, you are precisely correct. It is indeed the month of August. I honestly expected that to be about the fourth guest that would come in. I thought maybe October and then September, what might be up there, and your analysis is spot on.
Yeah, my first impulse would have been September,
mm-hmm.
but I figured that was too obvious, so I went with August.
Well, it seems like what happens in September is that it has a rough period and a good period, and the good period is just enough to creep past the bad period. So trying to time that thing would be an absolute nightmare.
Well, let's hope that trend continues this year, too.
Yes, since we've had the down period already, let's see if we can get a little reversal on it. All right, you're absolutely right. Anything else we can do for you today?
No, just enjoy the weekend, and let's pray for the next few months. They're going to be volatile.
I like that. Thank you very much. I'll put you on hold, and we'll get your address.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, it was indeed August. Yeah. And I thought this would be hard, especially since we came off that wonderful August.
I definitely missed it. So
yeah, you did.
Did better than I did.
I wouldn't have guessed it either. That was a pretty good analysis. See, top radio audiences, smart people.
That's right. Smarter than almost any other group of people.
That's absolutely true. All right, the payroll tax holiday. First off, employers are not required to allow this for you. So if you work for a company that says no, you can argue with them and maybe change their mind. But there isn't much you can do about that.
I actually, for my own salary, I decided not to take the holiday.
Okay, do you know how much of the payroll tax? And you've all heard our arguments that payroll tax is a very poor name because it's not really a tax. I'm forgetting that. We're calling it the payroll tax because that's what this is called.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of your payroll tax do you think is deferred in this?
If I had done it, I'm actually not sure. I just decided not to do it.
I did not know until this morning. It's 6.2% for the employee part.
Okay.
No Medicare for the employee, no Medicare or Social Security for the employer part.
Hmm.
So you're only looking at 6.2%. The deferral period is for September 1 to December 31.
That I knew.
4 months, okay? Taxes can only be deferred for people who make less than $4,000 in a biweekly pay period, or $104,000 if you'd rather, annually. The deferral is based on a pay period per pay period losses. So you can't just stop paying in and then have another payroll next week. You have to do it the 6.2 out of the payroll that you are paying that time. It is only a deferral. Now, here's where the confusion has set in. Trump said it is a deferral, but he wants to, quote, make it permanent. And here's what that means. Employers are responsible for collecting it, paying it in later, and all that stuff. We know that. And you have from January to April to get it paid in, which would, generally speaking, come in your regular payroll tax defer or holiday, or not holiday, payment, your monthly payment. And that would mean your paychecks would be smaller. And I will grant everybody that. If everything remains the way it is now, your paychecks would be smaller for the same length period that they were larger. And employers are responsible. So, for instance, if you deferred 4 months and then quit your job on March 1st, they're responsible for the blood out of the turnip of the leaving employee. Those are little things that we haven't come up with answers yet for, but I figure there are thousands and thousands of overpaid government people who are paid to sit around and concoct ways to do this. So I'll let them do that. But what did Trump mean by making it permanent? These things that you hear on TV say it's going to drive Social Security to go broke next year or the year after or whatever, because Trump wants to not have you make any more payments. He wants to permanently eliminate the payroll deduction for Social Security. That is so far from the truth, and it's the big lie of this month anyway. What he wants to do when he says make it permanent is take those 4 months of deferrals and repay that from general revenues so that you don't ever have to pay it back.
It's like forgiveness for a loan.
Exactly right. But who's going to forgive the Social Security Trust Fund? Well, that's where Adam and I both got set off. When this thing first came out about a month ago, we talked about it on the show, and we said, I don't like the concept of a payroll tax deferral because these payments are not payroll taxes. These payments are insurance premiums paid directly from your paycheck deduction into your accounts at Social Security and Medicare. All you're going to do is penalize your own account later on at Social Security, which could cost you money over your entire lifetime. It might even cost you eligibility if you didn't play your cards right. Well, that's not true anymore. First off, I thought it was on both sides, employer and employee. No, so even if the employer paid in, you know, your quarter would be safe, right? So
right.
That argument gets eliminated. But I always had the uneasy feeling, I guess, that if we started commingling funds from the general fund into your account or into the Social Security Trust Fund, that was the camel's nose slipping under the tent. There, to me, they were separate buckets of money, never the twain shall meet. Wrongo. I was incorrect. And here's why. First off, before I get down to the detail, who remembers the Obama payroll tax holiday in 2011 and 2012?
Definitely.
Remember that? That was 2% of your whole thing.
Right.
And nobody ever even discussed a payback on it. I was against it then and remained against it right up until now because I thought, well, there goes my earnings record for those 2 years at Social Security. Incorrect. Those 2 years got paid back out of general revenues.
Did they?
They did.
I did not know that.
How many ways do you think Social Security is funded?
I thought it was just, well, the employer side and the employee side of the payroll tax.
That's one, payroll tax.
I thought that was it. Is that not it?
Not true. The payroll tax is the primary one. But here's another one for you. I collect Social Security payments, Sarah collects them, and they're thrown onto our tax return, and that incremental part of the income we pay taxes on. It goes to the IRS, and the IRS throws that little part of it in a bucket. For me and for everybody else who collects a payment. Some people's Social Security is not taxed. The people have very low incomes. But most people are taxed at either 50% or 85% of their gross. All of that money that is paid in on behalf of those people goes into the Social Security bucket. And every, I think they said every quarter, it's accumulated. And the government writes a gigantic check to Social Security. That is the second layer of funding for the Social Security system. But there's even another one. And I'm going to, won't give it till after the break, but I'm going to set it up. What would happen if you were the administrator of the trust fund of the Social Security and Congress passed a law that said, all right, we're going to pay benefits to disabled people or to your sons and daughters or something that was never there before? I'll tell you right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we've been talking about the Trump Social Security payroll tax holiday. And I suppose for those of you who don't know me well, I should explain, I am not an economist. However, I've been studying it for 50 years, have a minor in economics and an MBA, and I've been working in this business for about 20 years. So I know a lot about what I speak. I will never pretend to take the place of a professional economist. Unless his name is Krugman, I would always argue that I'm right more often than he is, because he's never right. Actually, even he got one right lately. I may get to that. Anyway, we're talking about the Trump proposal because he wants to have an economic stimulus of some sort, and it's been portrayed poorly by almost everybody. But back in 2011 and 2012, Obama cut the payroll taxes by 2%, and at the end of all that, they calculated the income that was lost to Social Security, and the government wrote Social Security a check. They probably did it periodically along the way, like quarterly. The government wrote the trust fund a check to make up for it. Well, little did I know that there was no Chinese wall between the trust fund and the general revenues. And in fact, far from it. I mentioned when they changed the laws, for instance, if you're going to give anybody a benefit increase or add more people to the system or whatever it is, when Congress makes a change that actuarially affects the Social Security Trust Fund, and I know that can be an oxymoron too, but there is one on paper. So when that happens, general revenues are used to make it up one time to equalize it. It has been done back as old as the system is. It was used, and I did not know that, and Adam did not know that, and I stand enlightened and corrected. But it's funny that the entire Congress, both sides of the aisle, back in 2011, 2012, were praising the 2% cut and the solution to it with the check from general revenues, both of them praising up and down the aisle. But this time, because it's Trump, Democrats are saying, he's going to bankrupt the system. You can't do this. You can't do that. And it is just, there's not a hair of truth in the whole thing. I don't understand why more people aren't talking about this. But Adam and I were absolutely dead set against doing this because we didn't know about the three ways that Social Security is funded, the payroll tax and the tax on the benefits that are paid out to people, and the one-time makeup things for changes that Congress does, either change in the law or a lack of withholding. And it's all precedented. It's all built into the system. Nothing new is happening, and I don't think the camel's going to stick his nose any further than it should be. So now what do we do? Well, what do you do when you're frightening old people? I remember when my grandmother was getting older, and It was almost impossible to talk to her about some things because her answer would be, don't touch my Medicare, don't touch my Social Security.
Yeah.
It really was a life and death issue with
her. When you're dependent on something like that, that makes sense.
It really was a life and death issue. And she treated it that way. And I'm hearing now through the ears of a much older person than I was then and thinking, man, if I didn't know better, I'd be scared to death of this thing, too.
The thing is, I've said this for a long time, but there is no politician on the planet that will ever be the one that is blamed for Social Security, A, running out, or yep. B, getting cut benefits. It just won't happen. It's no. political suicide, and it might be actually setting them up to get killed by your grandma, because these people, they absolutely need it, and if you try and take it away, yep. it just won't happen. There's no way.
And we're not going to do that.
No, it's not going to happen.
On the ludicrous scale, how ludicrous is somebody saying that a presidential concept for Social Security would bankrupt the system during his term? Now, isn't that prima facie evidence of the lie?
And also, just do the smell test. The projections were for, what, 2035 to run out or something, somewhere around there. And now you're saying that if you took 4 months off of half of it, it yeah. runs out next year.
Yeah.
Now, that just, the math does not work.
Well, you want to know who did the math? I just happen to know this. Now, here's an economic cabal. Chris Van Hollen, Democrat, Massachusetts. Chuckie Schumer, Democrat, New York. And Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon. And Bernard Sanders, Socialist, Vermont. The four of them wrote a letter to the CBO, I think it is. No, it was in the Social Security system. One of their economists named Stephen Goss, they wrote him a letter asking for an assessment of the impact of, ready for this? A total elimination of payroll taxes until year end. Well, we're not talking about a total elimination. So what is that all about? But Goss played his liberal role perfectly, and you might say he's a typical example of liar's figure. But he wrote back and said that, of course, nothing else was in there. No, if it's not repaid, no this, no that. He said the system would go broke by mid-2023. So they're now taking off of this basic report and making all those just horrendous bad but commercials.
Even there, the math doesn't add up. 4 months of, if you removed all of it for 4 months, there is no way it would move the date up from 2035 to 2023. I don't buy it.
Absolutely not. You're right. So Adam and I were talking on the break a little bit about what's going on here. And we agreed, first off, as you were saying, the topic of Social Security is the third rail of politics. And for those of you who've never seen an electric subway or cable car, the third rail is the one that has the juice in it, and you don't touch it at your own risk, I guess. But everybody knows for years and years that any politician who even brings up cutting Social Security will be unelected, and only if he survives impeachment long enough to become unelected, but he or she is out, period. So somehow they have to come up with a fix that's going to help everybody. And we were talking about some various ways to do it. The thing we came up with, Trump's goal, he wants to give the middle class another tax cut next year. This is a true economic stimulus when you give the middle class a tax cut. Let's face it, the middle class is almost a disappearing entity right now. And part of it is because the tax rates are high. And they did a pretty good job with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act in 2017, because a lot of people got pushed back down a bracket into some nice lower ones, but it's not enough yet. So we think he would, if he had his druthers, and we have read indications that this might be true, he would take the two that are in the 20s, the 22, 24, or what?
Are the two.
And change all of those to 15%. Now, this would mean that the gigantic majority of working people would pay in the 15% bracket, which makes it an almost flat tax system.
It is close.
Yeah, really close. Well, that's wonderful. Now, other than the fair tax, which we'll be talking about again in the next month or so, other than the fair tax, the flat tax is a proposal that's, A, been around a long time, B, pretty hard to tear down, and C, almost reasonable enough that people like us think, well, we can live with that. So that's what he wants to do. He also did not like the way the top bracket came out under the 2017 Act, but I don't think there's a political climate right now that would allow him to mess with that one.
I would say absolutely not on that one.
So Biden wants to take the top rate back up to 39.6. It's currently at 37, I believe.
think that's right.
I think Trump would probably be smarter just to leave that at 37, but that 15% bracket would go up to, oh my God, it would cover so many people. I'm trying to think through our client base. There'd hardly be anybody that wouldn't be paying in that rate. And I think that would be one of the best economic stimulus plans ever.
Yeah, it would make Roth IRA conversions a really valuable tool for the future.
Which would mean a year or two of really nice tax payments while people were doing the conversions. I mean, I could argue this on a debate team, and I don't see how anybody could shoot it down. It is such a good idea, and that's what he wants. But, of course, they're trying to find any way to keep Trump from winning this election. And when they go so low as to scare America's elderly people, I have to sit up and say something. I hate having to discuss politics on a financial show, but I can't think of anything that is a bigger financial hit to the average American than having the Democrats take over this time. And next week, I'm going to talk about the actual tax plan, Biden's and Trump's, and you can see the dramatic difference and what a negative impact it would have on most of you who are listening right now. So don't want to be the bearer of bad tidings, but this is the lie they've been telling us this week. And when you hear those commercials, think about what I've said, and you'll see just how dramatically wrong they've been. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Banway Financial Hour.